Well, thanks for being with us here today. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein. Apps, facts, and a lot of maps. That's the title of tonight's Fireside Lecture Series. It's being billed as an adventure in cartography. Typically, these Fireside Lectures are held at the Mendenhall Visitors Center, but tonight's going to be virtual, and we'll tell you about how to watch that in just a little bit. But first, let's meet our guests, Jackie Foss and Kelsey Aho. They're known as data geographers, and they have a passion for making maps and other visual guides to help outdoors lovers explore the Chugach and the Tongass National Forest. So, Jackie and Kelsey, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, you bet.
Let me just get where both of you are. Kelsey, where are you?
I'm here in Juneau.
Okay, and Jackie, you're in Sitka, as I understand.
Yep, I'm in Sitka, so we're already virtual. We're well practiced.
I was going to say that's one of the small benefits of doing these things and getting used to doing things virtually. We can tie in from lots of different areas. So, just tell me a little bit about. Start with you, Jackie. Maybe since I've got you there on the screen. Tell me a little bit about what you're going to be going over and why. These apps, facts, and lots of maps, how all those things kind of interact?
I am very excited to share this information. Kelsey and I like to think about our maps as a storytelling tool. It's a way of describing where we are by place. And so we use a lot of what we call geospatial data, which is just information that's tied to a specific place, a lot long, an island, anything else. And so increasingly, we're visual people using our phones to navigate places, and the amount of data that's just available it's growing daily with satellites and, you know, people getting out and taking observations. So making that accessible and attractive is really kind of where Kelsey and I can help people, because there's so much out there. But the cool thing is there's people like us who have made sort of portals into these like geospatial data worlds that Kelsey has done just an outstanding job of finding a bunch of fun maps and apps and information to share.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's an interesting world that you both live in, because we have become so used to just being able to use GIS data like every day. Google Earth is on my phone and I can just zoom into whatever. It's a crazy leap from just 10 years, 20 years ago to be able to think about that. Now, it's incredible. So, but what is interesting to me is that even though I have this incredibly sophisticated tool compared to something 10, 20 years ago in my pocket, the way that that data can be segmented and bisected and looked at in different ways is completely beyond me. So is that part of, Kelsey, I'll turn to you. Is that part of what you all are going to go through tonight and talking about?
You know, we are. And we're actually going to start this evening by building a really simple app with everyone that joins. So we'll show how you can drop a few points into a map and how we can gauge information in real time, something like when you think of a dashboard of current events, whether you're up north and you're thinking about fire, or down here, you might have a dashboard of weather. I mean, for us, maps, they're both tools, but they're also like an aesthetic to them when it comes to storytelling. And of course, we have static maps that are paper maps that have a lot of value. And then we also have these dynamic maps, like you're referring to, or something that's even an application that's on a phone, or that you're utilizing on a computer, or something that might even have a function where you can run some sort of analysis and find the fastest route, which is incredibly sophisticated.
Yeah, it really interesting. What are some of the other ways that people might not think about how to use a map, but helps them understand both these hugely complex ecosystems that you work in?
Well, you went through the weather forecast. I mean, Alaskans are so used to incredibly complex data systems, and it's all map-based. When you look at your, you know, zone area forecasts, those are rasters. So the Weather Service models data according to these little squares. And so they average the different information between each of those stairs. So when you click on a pixel at your favorite fishing spot where you go and, you know, drop in on halibut, that is using a lot of the data systems that we have in the past. When you when your partner trolls and they're out on the fair weather grounds and you see the huge piece of ocean that they're predicting weather on, you're using this type of information. It's just, we don't think of it that way because it's just the weather, right? And we just check on that. But we, just by our lifestyle here, we're using a lot of this stuff already.
Sometimes it makes me think that you both must look at maps the way Neo looks at the Matrix, right? It's just a bunch of numbers just streaming by. You know, in some ways, it's all these data points. We don't think about that. When we look at a map, we think it's a visual picture. But really, all the maps that we deal with are drawn from zeros and ones.
Mm-hmm. It's true. I mean, I guess what you're describing, you're actually starting us at the very beginning, right? That's where the map starts, is on that first point that's put on that map. And because there's a lot of efforts out there where the public's engaged as well. There's an application called iNaturalist that you may have used, and the Forest Service, people can report data and you can have data that can be confirmed by either, if you're looking at bugs, we have entomologists or biologists that are out in the field and then can confirm what you're seeing. So in the Chugach, for example, folks have been going out there and mapping where they're finding morels after forest fire. And so those all just start with a single point. And then after we have this greater understanding, we can start creating like land cover maps or understanding vegetation trends across a huge landscape. But yeah, it starts with that one point, that one zero or one, presence or absence.
So interesting. There must be, is there a field of study that you're in right now that feels like, okay, this is the dynamic place, this is one of the dynamic things that's happening in our world of maps right now?
I mean, go ahead, Kelsey.
Oh, well, I mean, so, okay, I'll let Jackie answer what is dynamic. What I think is cool is that I think it's more accessible. You know, it used to be that applications, Jackie and I have been on the, you know, edges of our days or on the margins coding and learning different coding languages, but there's now like drag and drop options. People can dive into and build their own applications. And this really changes the game on who can run analysis and how different kinds of data need to be utilized, which is why it can be a little bit cumbersome if you're going through the Forest Service webpage and you're looking for different kinds of data, because we have it organized for all different types of users, people that want raw data or people that want data already in maps or in applications.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say, Kelsey. I was going to say that the data is all there, but how people interact with it is becoming a lot more straightforward. So you don't have to be Neo in the Matrix looking at ones and zeros. You can be on the outside saying, I really want to build a system of tree data, but I don't want to go that deep. I just want to pull the tree data in one place and be able to view it in relation to streams. And so it creates the ability for people to not have to be a computer scientist or a programmer. They're a cartographer, or they are a wildlife biologist, or they're a landscape ecologist that are interested in exploring data because they have some questions. So it helps folks that have the spatial knowledge, but not necessarily the coding background for it. And that's a pretty exciting place to be for more doors and accessibility for more people creating what they want.
It seems like it can touch upon so many different sciences, especially in fields of study, but also on just regular people's lives. How does that seems like a place where you guys want to really get to with what you're talking about tonight. So how does a normal person interact with maps in a way that they might not understand or may not anticipate?
That's a great question. Let's see.
And I think it also starts with like, what kind of map are you excited about? You know, we're also, we kind of see ourselves as like the maps or data series of the world. So we're like, okay, just tell us what you're looking for. And then we kind of co-create or get you on a path to find that kind of application or what sort of analysis you could be running.
One of the things I'm just like, I would think right off the bat when you think in the world of maps is climate change. Okay, when you, mm-hmm. you know, you have different data sets over time of climate change in a graphic and, visual way, you're able to see the changes over time. And then different levels of science can look at that, but also just regular people can look at that and say, oh, how's the glacier changed over the past 20 years? Everyone has that picture, you know, from 20 years ago, that standing by the glacier, and it's, you know, it's shocking almost to see it. But seeing that over in this graphical sense on in maps must be something that is talked about all the time in your field.
It is. And so one thing that I find really exciting right now is this thing that is the concept of something like a raster stack. So when you think of a stack, think of it like a series of layers that have something different. So you have the Mendenhall Glacier, and it's where it's moved through time. And then we put on top of that temperature, right? And then we put on top of that rain versus snow. And because you have all of this data together, you can see how this area right here, the Mendenhall Glacier, the temperature has changed this way in these areas and this way in these areas. And we can see, oh, this went from mostly snow driven to this is rain driven now. And that also, and so the glacier looks like this here. So when you think of data as not a single piece of data, but how it can interact with all of the other data out there. And this is just an example off the top of my head. There's so many people with broad knowledge that as soon as you consider the relationship between all of this stuff, and the fact that you can see it in front of you in a map, and you can move it around and you can make it different colors. And I, back to what you were saying, people might not realize that they're interacting with a map, because there's been some pretty amazing cartographers that have made the maps beautiful and accessible and useful in ways that people aren't even realizing that they're interacting, because it's just so seamless in the way they go through their lives. Signs that direct cruise ship passengers where to go, right? Like that is a real thoughtful exercise, and that could be considered a map. Its place, its signs, but its purpose is to know where people are, where people want to go, and how to keep them from getting run over by a truck. So, you know, it's really important, like how all of these different data sets relate to each other.
Oh, yeah. And I was going to say, and all the different disciplines that can play into that kind of question, such as how is the climate changing? I mean, Jackie and I joke about this. My mom will ask, like, oh, isn't everything already mapped? But a lot of these maps are dynamic. So something like the glacier, you know, we have velocity of how fast the glacier is moving, because we have satellites that are taking images, you know, every 7 or 9 days. And similarly, we have data for volume. So we can use radar to see how is the glacier changing, like the height of it changing. So, you know, changes in volume, not just where it's covering the ground. Or, you know, you might have a, you know, veg ecologist that's using satellite imagery to see how different succession is changing alongside a glacier, which would be all different proxies for looking at climate and how it's changing through different disciplines.
I can't believe your mom is questioning this discipline of all people. Come on, mom.
She has to test me.
This is important work. No, everything's not math. Well, it's just like mothers everywhere. They, you know. But that's such an interesting thing to think about, isn't it? Of course, the data points on a map, not only with a glacier that's obviously, you know, going to be, you know, receding or coming forward or whatever, but also in other areas, new data points. What are some of those kind of deep layers of data that still do need to be collected, or that you'd like to see collected in areas that we might think are fully mapped, or that, oh boy, all the data's already been collected?
Oh man, the state of Alaska. There's so many opportunities for mapping in the state of Alaska. So soil mapping is a product created by the NRCS that helps landowners know how best to use and manage their land. Currently in the United States, there's 400 million unmapped acres. There are 300 million of that are in Alaska, and this is considered baseline soil, thank you, Kelsey, soil data. So this is soil data that just says who's there, what is my substrate for my grow, that where what's growing there. And then you add wetlands, and then you add vegetation. So like basic ecological knowledge is missing in some of our remote areas of our like massive state, but also throughout the world, you know, just understanding where all these places are and being able to document those is not complete, because a lot of it's inaccessible, which is cool because there's so much opportunity out there those who are interested in getting out there.
Still so much work to be done.
There's still a frontier, man. It's just not how people think of it.
that's a fascinating way to think of it. That's a fascinating way. We'll leave it at that. There's still a frontier out there. We can learn more about it from Jackie Foss and Kelsey Aho, who are going to be doing the fireside lecture tonight. So thanks to both of you for being here. Much appreciated. I want to keep talking to you about this, but we have to keep going here. So thanks for being here, giving us a full appreciation of this world of maps. You can watch their presentation tonight at 7 o'clock. It's online. All you have to do is go to the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center Facebook page, and you can find it right there. So go there at 7 o'clock tonight. Is there going to be an interactive component to that? Will people be able to kind of – how will that work?
Yeah, we will have an application where folks will – we'll have like a survey component, and you'll be able to see the data you put into it in real time. So we'll compare some favorite seasons and places on the Tongass and the Chugach.
That's great. All right.
Yeah, we're going to try to crowdsource with the chat. So as best we can.
Yeah, it's we're still the Zoom world is still developing as well, but a fascinating thing and an exciting presentation happening. Again, it's at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center's Facebook page, and if you go there at 7 o'clock tonight, you can hear from Jackie Foss and Kelsey Aho on the fascinating world of maps. Thank you so much to both of you for coming in for coming into your living rooms there. and talking to us about your presentation tonight, and good luck with that tonight.
Thanks.
And up next, why the city and borough of Juneau is reaching out to find out the best way to reach out. That's coming up next.